VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, England get an opening win. Is Raheem Sterling the man to carry them to success at Euro 2020? Elsewhere, the Netherlands thrust their way into winning style and Austria show they could be an outside bet for a dark horse in the tournament. All that and more on today's episode of The Game. I'm joined by Matt Lawton, Henry Winter and Gregor Robertson. And I begin, of course, by asking exactly what England did to get themselves off to a positive start in Euro 2020. Henry, I'll start with you.
I thought it was good. I mean, you almost had to be there to experience the heat. It was 27-28 where we were sitting, about one tier up. But pitch side, it was 30-31. So for the players to cope with that, the initial nerves going into a tournament, I was very impressed. You know, they started well and they finished well. Sterling took his goal superbly. And I mean, you've only got to know Sterling's backstory to know how important Wembley is to him. He was born 500 yards, or he grew up 500 yards from the stadium. The arch was a central part in his sort of life growing up, just sort of seeing that it symbolises so much to him. So for him then to score, moving off the left, getting through the middle, taking that pass from Calvin Phillips, who, I mean, Sterling got man of the match, but for me, Calvin Phillips was just outstanding. Everything he did was terrific. And Sterling finished well. So, yeah, I mean, Southgate was definitely vindicated. I think what today showed was how good Southgate is at his man management, not simply on match days, but in leading up to it. So Sterling comes back from Porto, which I know you've discussed. And, you know, he's not in the best state of mind, having, you know, the frustration of losing the Champions League. And then you've got Southgate greeting him, reassuring him, telling him he's going to play, giving him this license to move inside, having a more defensive defender behind him in Kieran Trippier. And, you know, it paid off. It was Southgate's day and it was Sterling's day.
Matt, what do you think? A lot of people were very surprised about the lineup. Were you happy with it?
Well, it was almost what we thought was coming, but the one surprise was Trippier. And, you know, it explains why he picked so many right backs, because he intended to pick one of them at left back. So other than that, it wasn't a surprise. It wasn't the team I sort of picked in the paper at the start of the week. I was miles off, and I imagine my team would have lost 3-0. So Southgate earns the big bucks for a reason. It was a good performance. It was, you know, I sat there, Henry and I are veterans of numerous tournaments, and I did sort of have that sort of sinking feeling as the match sort of, even though Pickford wasn't really put under any great pressure, you know, we still have nightmares about my match report in Portugal in 2004 when England were beating France, the defending champions, with like minutes to go and they were 1-0 up, and then suddenly it's like, you know, 2-3 minutes of chaos and they lose 2-1. And it was, you know, I think Southgate as well, the way he reacted to the final whistle, you know, even the way that he sort of embraced Sterling when he came off. And there was a tremendous sense of not just elation, but relief that they had indeed won that first, you know, the first time they've won the first game of a European Championship. And it was an incredibly important victory.
Gregor, what did you think? Hindsight is a wonderful thing, isn't it? We all had this argument over what Gareth Southgate might select. What did you make of the 11 he chose and how it panned out?
Yeah, I agree with Matt. I think, you know, Trippier was the only kind of surprise, really. But I can't understand it. I think when you look at, you know, he's probably gone on feel there. He's got a lot of, you know, the players in the, well, he's got Tyrone Mings primarily alongside him, who's kind of fairly new to international football, never played in a major tournament. And I think he probably thought if I put in Luke Shaw or Chilwell alongside him, then that looks a bit of a callow kind of half of a back four. So I would imagine if Harry Maguire plays in the next game or the game after that, then it would be Luke Shaw. Or it could be Ben Chilwell. You know, I just think that he went on feel there, which is perfectly understandable. And you know, I don't want to come over the curmudgeonly Scotsman here, but I'm a little bit surprised by the level of praise England have got in the way. Because look, they won. That's the main thing, and you played with control, which is something that England haven't done historically against Croatia or against some of the better teams. But I thought the first hour was kind of pretty slow and laboured, and it had the feel of a Charity Shield game to me for the first hour, kind of like a step up from a friendly game. And it was hot, as Henry says, it's very hot, and you have to say Croatia are also a decent team, but I still think there's a lot of improvement for England to make. But as I say, they won the game and they played with, you know, a degree of control, which is not something they've done in the past.
Henry, I was arguing with all of my mates about Calvin Phillips, the Leeds, of course, midfielder, saying, what's he doing going box to box? Gareth Southgate's asked him to do something that he's not really familiar with, but he was basically the man of the match in the end of it. Did you see some sort of tactical nous there?
Southgate tried that with him before and it didn't really work. And a lot of Leeds United fans were saying, you know, why is he playing him further forward? I think it worked today. I mean, look, I don't know whether television probably didn't show this, but he was dropping back quite a fair bit alongside Declan Rice. But he's just got that energy. And it's not simply physical with Calvin Phillips. He's just got this huge desire to do well. He's lived for this moment. He's had so many messages from Leeds friends, from, I think it's pronounced Wortley, his first team. All the sort of the age group teams there have been sending him video messages. It's actually been quite moving. I think probably everyone in Yorkshire, or most people in Yorkshire, have sent him video messages. Just, you know, he's known as the Yorkshire Pirlo. There's huge pride. And he knew from quite a long time out that he'd be going to the Euros. He's been earmarked by Southgate to play this role. Southgate's obviously seen something in it. That energy, and as Gregor was saying, you know, the heat there was pretty ferocious at times, and yet he made light of it. I personally thought he should have been man of the match. I can understand, you know, the sponsors want the goal scorer and all that, but I thought Phillips was outstanding.
I think it's worth mentioning that if the tournament, I mean, this is no blame at anyone, but if the tournament happened last year, he wouldn't have been in the squad. And that's largely because he was playing in the Championship still. And, I wrote a piece about 16 months ago saying, you know, that was a problem area for England. Declan Rice was coming through, Harry Winks was in the frame. There was always a spot open for a midfielder, and he was good enough, despite playing the Championship. He was playing in one of the most kind of tactically sophisticated teams in the country under Bielsa. Didn't matter who was playing in the Championship. I think he probably could have got the call up earlier, but he's there now. You know, he's been brilliant this season in the Premier League, and he's someone who staked a massive claim to play a big part for England in this competition.
Do you know what, Gregor? You know what was great is where Matt and I were sitting. We had some of the families, like the John Stones' family, over to our left. And then we had a lot of the families, you know, the Canes and the Maguires. They were all there sort of in front of us. And obviously you're focusing on the game, but you can see, you know, parents and brothers and sisters and loved ones sort of jumping up and down and supporting their team. That's their, you know, their players, their siblings, their relatives, their children, whatever. And it's actually quite, you realize what a, but was particularly coming back to Phillips, you know, his mother worked so hard bringing him up because his father was in and out of prison. He's actually in prison over the road from where Calvin Phillips trains with Leeds at Thorpe Arch. And, you know, but his mother has just been such a huge force in his life. And, you know, to see all those parents there, you can see that emotional connection. You know, we've had this in the past. I mean, Matt was there in 2006 in Baden-Baden with the WAGs there. And the families were almost a distraction, whereas the families this time, obviously, they're not going up to St. George's Park, but the families, they're just adding to it. They're enhancing the players' design. So the players, when they've gone into their room at St. George's Park, there have been messages left for them by the FA staff, by Southgate staff, but messages taken from parents saying, I can remember when I drove you to your first match. You make me so proud that you've gone on this journey. Look at it now. Now go out onto the pitch at Wembley and make the country proud. So, yeah, I just thought that was a sort of special moment. And I actually did think a bit of Phillips's mother, because of how much that this will mean to see her son playing so well, but also the sacrifices that she has made. I think she until so recently she was still working in a pizza place and just doing shift after shift there to sort of generate the money to so that Calvin could have boots, could go Leeds training, whatever. So yeah, it was very much a family feel today.
You make a good point though, Henry, because what people perhaps don't realise is that yeah, they were there, but they wouldn't have been able to see them afterwards because of this whole COVID bubble thing. And so, yeah, the messages is one thing, but they are having to sort of navigate through this tournament. And obviously it will become, I guess, a sadder aspect of it as the tournament goes on. But yeah, their families were there. And yeah, the Foden family, I think Foden's brothers were to our left as well. But they can't actually see them after the game and, you know, hugs and kisses and all that stuff because it's, you know, they had, you know, we've already seen it. You know, Portugal lost a player today, didn't they, with COVID. And, you know, it's a news story that we sort of, you know, have to be on guard that could break, you know, that we have such a situation. You know, imagine if a quarter final, don't want to get ahead of ourselves, Gregor, obviously, but if we the curmudgeonly Scot, if we got to, you know, such a late stage and suddenly one of the key players, you know, imagine it, Harry Kane test positive for COVID.
Yeah, it's
a global news story, you know.
Matt, you really notice it. Sorry, Hugh, just jumping in again. You really notice it going to St. George's Park. So there's one reporter allowed, effectively, per media organisation. You go in, you get tested, and then you go into this almost like sort of biosecure bubble but it's like a sort of pub garden in a way, but it's a socially distanced pub garden where the player is like 4 meters away, socially distanced. We've all got our masks on. We have to go and put our tape recorders down on the table. I mean, the FA, to be fair to them, they're leaving absolutely nothing to chance on the medical protocol front and completely right because, you know, as Matt says, we have to protect all the players. And you go and put your tape recorder down on the table, on this picnic table, and then whichever player comes in and sits down. And then the moment they go away, then we pause and then we go over and pick up our tape recorders, at which point an FA official comes and, you know, sprays down the table with, I was going to say insecticide because we're in the countryside, but just to clean the whole sort of place down.
Is that, Henry? Is that Steve Holland who does that, or is it like he comes over with the cloth and the spray?
I think Steve. We did actually talk to Steve Holland on the sanitized pub garden table, and he was really good, fascinating guy. But yeah, just coming back to Matt's point is completely right. Is that nothing is being left to chance. And that's a good point that Matt makes about the fact that there is no contact apart from a Zoom, apart from away from 30 yards away to the families.
Gregor, I wanted to ask you about Raheem Sterling, because a lot of people were surprised that he was included in England's starting 11, played pretty well, got the goal as well. What does he add to England's team?
I think the first thing that leapt to mind, certainly in the first half, was that he offered that threat in behind. There was numerous balls. I think Trippier played several down the line. Tyrone Mings played several. And, Sterling just has that ability just to spring. He comes short and go in behind. And that, you know, that stretches the play. That's another string to the ball. You know, if you had Grealish and Foden on the other side, it's not quite the same, not quite as dynamic. So he definitely offered that. And he's just relentless. He just keeps trying to get on the ball, keeps trying to go at players, keeps trying to fashion something. He had lots of half chances. A couple where he he had his left foot volley, it hit over the bar. There was one in the first half where he tried to cut back inside when he could have maybe got a shot off, but he kept going and he got his goal. And yeah, I mean, you saw him kind of, the question was put to him after the game, you know, do you feel you've justified your selection, which I felt was a little bit kind of, I don't know, forthright. And he was kind of just smiled and thought, you know, I'm trying. He said, I'm trying. And smiled, and you think he's done a lot for England. He's been consistently brilliant for England, and you know, you can see why Southgate was determined to kind of show him the loyalty despite the clamour for Jack Grealish and others.
Matt, what do you think? Does Sterling start from here on out?
Well, I think he certainly keeps his place. And look, I think Greg is right, and it's Henry's point at the start of the conversation about man management and about bringing the best out of players. You know, the lift that Southgate would have given him, you know, when I know he played in the Champions League final, but Pep has been leaving him out, and the lift that it would have given him to be told by Southgate, you're my man, you're in, you know, you've got a massive role against Croatia. And he responded accordingly. But the other crucial thing about Sterling, which when you look at certainly the forward players, and what we are, you know, understandably excited about the talent of these young players, but you do need some experience as well. And Sterling has actually experienced the good and the bad. He's got the battle scars as well as the good memories from Russia, and that is valuable, and it will prove more valuable as the tournament goes on.
It's the same balance as I was mentioning at the back with Trippier alongside Mings. It's the same. You know, if you have Mount, Foden and Grealish in behind Kane, then that's, you know, as you say, Matt, there's just not quite the same level of experience and, yeah, you know, someone who's been at the tournament and been there and done it. So absolutely, it was said afterwards, these decisions all came off for him. It'll be interesting to see what they do against Scotland.
Gregor, in terms of Scotland, if I can just chip in, what would concern you more if you were Steve Clarke? For Sterling to go over to the right because his pace might give Robertson and Tierney something to think about, or to continue with Foden there?
The thing is that each of these players offers a different threat, a very different type of threat. And, you know, Tierney, I think he can match most players for pace in a kind of one-on-one like that. I think when you come up against someone like Foden, who's a little bit craftier, drifted inside, he has been known to kind of not switch off, but to maybe sacrifice, you know, to give up a yard of space a little bit too much. And so I would say Foden would probably be the bigger threat against them. But as I say, we've got O'Donnell on the right who came to international football quite late. The left side of our defence is certainly stronger than the right, so I think whoever they play on the left is probably the more important thing for England's point of view.
Matt, what next for Jack Grealish in particular in England going into that game against Scotland? Would you like to see him start?
I don't, not at the moment. I like Grealish. I'm really glad that he's in the squad. You know, I think he's really exciting, but no, I don't think. A lot will depend on Maguire, but I'd be very surprised if Maguire is fit by Friday. I don't anticipate many changes, because the change that you would perhaps expect, and I'm not suggesting for one second with Gregor on this call that this should be an easier game, heaven forbid. But you might suddenly think, well, Scotland, do we need to play two sort of defensive midfielders in Phillips and Rice, but the last thing you're going to do is change that after today. So I don't really see, Henry might disagree with me, but I don't really see many changes other than perhaps, you know, I think the changes will come. I think Greg hit the nail on the head. I think you might see a change at left back once you got Maguire back, but I don't see him doing much different.
The one thing I'll say about the left-back situation, I take what Gregor was saying earlier about what Trippier brings in terms of his experience. I mean, Southgate described him as a warrior, the way he's played for Atletico Madrid. And I understand that, you know, that relationship with Tyrone Mings in terms of bringing that sort of experience and almost guiding Tyrone Mings through. I thought Mings had a good game. But the one thing I felt about it at left-back is that England did lose out on some of the width that Shaw and Chilwell can deliver and get balls crossed in, because Trippier will come back onto his right. and Sterling will move inside. So you really need. I thought England did miss a little bit on the overlap there, and I think Harry Kane would have missed that as well. You know, that sort of delivery into the box from the left, because you don't necessarily get it so much from Foden, who tends to sort of cut inside as well. So I agree with Matt. I don't think there'll be many changes. I think he'll just have a look at them during the week and then try and go all out for the victory against Scotland, which would then, touch wood, if England do get a result against Scotland, and everyone knows how ferocious that's going to be, then he might mix it up for the Czech Republic game.
You've jinxed it, Henry. I've got to be honest, because anything could happen from here on out.
Do you know, I've been to so many Scotland games, and the first England game I saw as a fan, the first England-Scotland game I saw as a fan was at Hampden Park in 1984. And I think it was Lineker's debut, and Woodcock equalised. And I was in with the Scottish fans, with some Scottish mates of mine. And I have to say, from then on, I've it is the fixture for me. Not simply because it's the oldest international fixture, but just because of the pure intensity in the stands and on the pitch. And none of the usual rules, none of the FIFA rankings, any of that apply. You know, I can remember Don Hutchinson absolutely bullying England's defence in that playoff at Euro 2000. Honestly, I've seen too many of these games to not go into it with a certain trepidation. All I'm saying is that if England do manage to survive this test, and I think probably the odds on are for a draw, then Southgate has got options to rotate a bit for the Czech Republic game.
Matt, would you like to see England change anything at all going into that game against Scotland?
No, I think Henry actually made a great point about more width. So perhaps that would be the one change at left back. But I think he'll stick with that team. It's a team that is now confident. You know, Southgate talked afterwards about what it means to win that first game and the way it will impact on the sort of mood in the camp. So they're going to be buoyant. They're going to be positive, and they'll go into that game feeling good about themselves. It's Scotland. It's hard to predict. I was actually at the last Scotland game in a major tournament. I was covering it in Saint-Étienne in 1998. It was an interesting one because I actually watched the England game against Romania the night before with lots of Scottish colleagues, which was pretty unpleasant. And then I always recall that I was with a guy called John Lay, who used to work for Telegraph, and every night he'd get a phone call. From the breakfast show in Sydney in Australia. And we were sitting having dinner after the England game, and the phone goes, and there it is, and John's chatting away to these two DJs in Sydney, and I can hear John saying, it's not an easy being an Englishman in Lyon tonight, lads. You know, we've surrounded by jubilant Scots. And they're all enjoying England's poor performance against Romania, blah 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 blah. And then quite clearly, one of the hosts says, "Can you get one of the Scotland fans to come on the line?" And I'm sitting there thinking, "No, don't do it." And there's these two guys walking by, both wearing kilts, and John Lay says to one of them, "Say good morning to Sydney Breakfast Radio." And all I can say is he had nothing, didn't say good morning, had nothing to do with football. It was unrepeatable what he said. It was the most extraordinary moment. I don't know where he got this comment from, but it was, And then, as I say, the following night, 3-0 Morocco. Sorry, Gregor, but it was brutal.
Yeah, brutal. I remember that very well, unfortunately.
23 years. I can't believe it's 23 years.
Matt, the only good thing about that was that the Scottish journalist, because I lost a bet with one of them, so I had to post him €50 because I wasn't going to see him for a bit. And he gave me the address, and they were all staying in Avignon. And the great thing was is that they were staying in the Hotel Angleterre. So I underlined it about sort of four times for the French post office, just to sort of underline the point with my tear-stained €50 note inside.
will come to Scotland's first match at the competition tomorrow, of course, in the same group as England. But England with a positive start at Euro 2020. Let's look at the other games on Sunday, though, because they were pretty entertaining. Let's quickly talk about Austria. Beat North Macedonia 3-1, Gregor. Do you think they can surprise anyone in Euro 2020?
I thought it was quite an entertaining game. It was largely because the quality was not really there, but it was a bit, you know, calamitous at times. Although having said that, the first Austria's opener, Sabitzer's ball to the back post was absolutely superb. And Alaba's cross, in fact, for Gregorizic, I think his name is. Fine name, that. That was a moment of great quality as well. And then Arnautovic, who we know very well, kind of came on, scored the third and seemed to want to fight all his teammates. It was a slightly strange game. In answer to your question, I think probably not. No, I think this was a game that was kind of entertaining, but between two teams who are probably not quite got the quality to progress too far in the competition.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Elsewhere in Group C, Netherlands 3-2. Henry, lots of talk about De Boer and whether he's the manager to take the Netherlands forward. He has, of course, won this first match, but it wasn't as convincing as many hoped it would be. What do you think?
Oh, it was brilliant to watch, though. I mean, I rushed home from Wembley to get there in time for kickoff, and I'd heard all the stories coming out of the Dutch camp. Well, certainly from the Dutch supporters and the plane going over training, saying, please play 4-3-3. That's the sort of Dutch way. And he has, and he was gone with three at the back. But two, it's absolutely fantastic game. I mean, that, you know, obviously we've missed the Dutch in tournaments recently. We've missed their supporters. We've missed the quality of football. You just look at a player like Wijnaldum, who was just driving through the middle, and you think, oof, have Liverpool missed a trick by not giving him that extended contract and that sort of, you know, the bigger wages that he wanted. He was absolutely outstanding. I mean, Frenkie de Jong, I mean, I was looking at some of his statistics online afterwards, and they are just off the scale. I mean, in terms of pass completions, in terms of chances created, I mean, it's just an unbelievable performance. And then, so the two wide players, you know, sort of Memphis Depay on the left, and we remember him from his time over here where he sort of disappointed. And I thought he was terrific, and he's obviously maybe have a little bit more of a sort of goal threat in games like that, but I thought he was outstanding. And then one of Gregor's mates, Dumfries, on the right. I mean, he was fantastic. I tell you what, it's a great build up for Scotland when you got Sterling and Dumfries scoring winners on the same day. But honestly, he was terrific. I've not seen too much of him, but what a good player. He's got skill. Scored the goal, the header. The keeper probably could have done more, but you know, Ukraine had come back into it to make it 2-2. But honestly, it was just a joyous occasion to watch the Dutch play again, obviously in Amsterdam, Johan Cruyff Arena, sort of special place. And then to play like that and have a finish like that was, you know, it was a belting game.
It's a great story as well, isn't it? Because it's a great story as well because, you know, had the tournament taking place when it should have done, De Boer wouldn't have been the manager, it would have been Koeman, which is, I think, has created a little bit of nervousness, certainly among the Dutch fans. And it's a bit of a theme with the tournament, isn't it? Because with the Wales team as well, you know, they haven't got the manager that they expected to have in charge. And so there's these sort of very interesting sort of soap operas within the actual tournament that make it, you know, add a little bit of extra intrigue.
What are the nerves like going into that first match then?
You know, I don't really feel nervous because, as I've said many, 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 many times on this podcast now, I'm just so happy that we're here.
He's blagging it. He's nervous.
No, I really am not. I think, you know, Steve Clark has done a lot to earn people's trust, the supporters' trust. We've got a way of playing. We've got a bit of a togetherness, as I've said again. I thought, you know, there's some parallels perhaps with Wales in 2016. They seem to be really kind of, you know, a united group of lads. And I think, you know, I think the team kind of almost picks itself too. There's a few positions, you know, who perhaps in midfield, whether he's going to go two up front with Adams and Dykes, or just one and have another player off him, perhaps kind of Christie or Armstrong, or, you know, Ryan Fraser would have been in there as well, perhaps a little shorter fitness. But really, we kind of know the team, we know how we're playing, and we know, and I think the players have got a lot of belief in that. So I think we should have some belief in them too. And I kind of almost do, which feels quite strange.
Yeah, because you're blagging it, like I said. Gregor, blagging it in terms of what Scotland might do at this top competition. But I'm interested to think what Henry and Matt might think about what Scotland can do at this competition. Henry, can they go and surprise everyone? What do you think?
I don't think it would be a complete surprise when you look at the quality of the players they've got. You know, we see how well they play each week. I mean, I'm in my study at home and I've got a huge great, remember, Bannockburn flag, which I acquired at Hampden down the years. And you just know the Scots, when they put that shirt on, that, I mean, are you saying McTominay is going to be scared taking on England's midfield, however good they are? Are you saying that McGinn is going to go into his shell and not sort of play the passes that he can do? Are you telling me that sort of Robertson and Tierney aren't just going to sort of absolutely relish stepping out at Wembley? And I think in years gone by and tournaments gone by, or certainly, you know, just matches between the two in past years, I think you would look at the tone of the build-up and there will be a bit of rah-rah England this week, but it won't be from the players. The players will not say anything which can be construed and then put into headlines and used as further fuel for the Scottish fire. I think there's a lot of respect, partly because a lot of them play with the Scottish players, play against the Scottish players, so, you know, week in, week out in the Premier League. So I think it's going to be, look, I know the media will try and ramp it up, give it the old sort of Battle of Britain, Braveheart, stuff like that, but I don't think you'll get any of that from Southgate and the players. I think it will be, I just think it will actually be, I mean, it doesn't work great for headlines and for the media narrative, but I think it will actually be fairly respectful, certainly from the English this week, and I'm sure from the Scots as well.
Matt, you looking to be very respectful this week?
Yeah, I have to say, I thought Henry was about to tell us he had a huge study, by the way. I thought he was going to say, huge study. I've got a huge study. No, I do, and for all the reasons, all the points that Henry's made, you know, they've got good players. They have got good players, and the England players will know that. You know, you listen to them. I was listening to, you know, Calvin Phillips tonight talking about, you know, his mate who played, his Leeds mate who plays for Scotland, you know, and you know, there's so many of them in the Premier League. Robertson is one of the best fullbacks in the world and you know, would be in anybody's team probably. I think it's a really intriguing game. And I think I can see why Gregor isn't actually that nervous, because I think you go in as a Scotland fan with fairly low expectations. And I think that's why, no, but I'm going to qualify that and say that.
No,
I think, I think that's why actually, Gregor, that we're sort of, there's a bit of a buzz around England tonight, because actually we didn't really expect them to win the first game. You know, that I think we knew they were capable of it, but because, you know, we generally, as a national team, start tournament slowly, that was a pleasant surprise today. And I think this game will be the game on Friday. Obviously, as I say, we've got to see how they go against the Czech Republic. I think the Czech Republic are dangerous, and I think you know, it could be for Scotland. Friday could then become a very, very important game if things don't quite go to plan tomorrow night. And And tomorrow afternoon. So there was a great line where Robertson was making a sort of national plea earlier for all the schools to let the kids knock off early so they could watch the game. So brilliant. That kid's going to be running the country in about 10 years' time.
That's my abiding memory of the last the tournament you're talking about in France 98. I was 14 and it was the same. There was an afternoon kickoff, the first game, the opening game of in France against Brazil. And they called an impromptu assembly, the headmaster did, and said, no one's allowed to leave. And then at lunchtime, the gates opened and the entire school fled.
Really?
Yeah. Brilliant. So I was wondering whether they might kind of come to their senses and realize that trying to keep school children who've never, think of that, they've never seen their team, their nation in a major tournament, a whole generation. So trying to keep them away from watching the game, either in class or allowing them to go and watch it, would be ludicrous.
Well, listen, Gregor, there's plenty more to look forward to, not just for yourself, but all Scotland supporters. We will react to their first game at Euro 2020 in around 24 hours. Remember, if you're enjoying the podcast, make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times. And right now, if you do, you can get it for less than £1 a day. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/thegame to get started. Remember, you can start your free trial right now. We will see you in around 24 hours. See you then.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.